everybody. Welcome. Go ahead and grab a seat. Thank you all for taking the stairs.
I don't know.
We might need you all to go even higher. I know it's hot. Maybe you're good.
Do we have a moderator?
Do we have a moderator?
There's John.
There's John. John, we might need to come back down.
Here, I can pass it.
Okay. Do we have a mic for the moderator?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We're glad that you're here. Go ahead and grab a seat. We're delighted that you're with us. You'll see these little sheets of paper around the room if this is your first time. These are actually really important. The top QR code is the way that you can at any point tonight ask us any question whatsoever, and we will have John moderate that in a second. And you can also join our email list by that bottom left QR code. Also, Alexandra and Meredith. I think I saw Alexandra, didn't I? Yeah, hey, there, you're right there. Alexandra and Meredith help lead Holy City Life. That's an opportunity to hang out outside of these every other week, Theology on Tuesdays, which is really fun. And you can join that GroupMe to stay in the know on how to get connected. I want you to share, because it was a great time last Wednesday, about the C.S. Lewis class that you're doing while I hand this to
you. All right. So if you are interested in C.S. Lewis or the Chronicles of Narnia, we are doing a class right now on The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe on Wednesdays in the Parish Hall at St. Philip's from 7:15 to 8:15. I think it is super fun, but I'm biased since I'm teaching it. But there also is worship at 5:30 and a free delicious dinner at 6:30 right beforehand if you would like to come. There were a lot of people from Theology on Tuesdays that came last week, so that was really cool. But if you're even remotely interested, I'd encourage you to check it out. If you want to get a free sample, you can go onto the podcast or to the St. Philip's YouTube channel and listen and just get an idea about what it's like.
Yeah, I'm really excited, and I'm hoping
not as excited as I am.
Okay, well, I'm not going to compete against you in that. But my daughter and I are hoping to join you actually, because she has to read the book next year in her class for The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
That would be so cool.
We'll be there. Yeah, it'll be fun. And what is also fun is talking about friendship, which is the topic for tonight. It's actually going to be the topic the next few weeks that we get together for Tot. And tonight's going to be all about what is actually true friendship, what makes for true friendship. And I love thinking about that topic because anybody here, this is like, I think it's like incessantly playing on the airwaves across the world, but the show Friends, anybody here actually seen it? I've never, okay, a handful of people. Does anybody know what it is? Oh man, only getting a couple nods about the show Friends.
We're old.
Way back in the day, there was this show.
There was a show that was called Friends.
Yeah, and it was about six people in their 20s.
People were obsessed with it.
Living in New York City. It's
even more than people are obsessed with Taylor Swift.
Exactly. But I love one of the main guys, David Schwimmer. He said, you know, the reason it was such a huge success was because for many people it was this like fantasy world where your friends became like closer even than your family. That it tapped into something that all of us really want. So friendship is really important, and we're going to talk tonight about just how crucial it is. There's a few things we'll talk about, but especially that, and try to hit on some of this from a different angle because I think we're starved for it today. Mm-hmm. So why is friendship so crucial, first of all?
Well, that is a great question. So one of the things that has happened in our culture is that we are having, depending on which researcher you listen to, a crisis of friendship, a famine of friendship, a crisis of loneliness, a pandemic of loneliness. And I want to just read just a couple of little things off of very current surveys. Some of you might be aware that the Surgeon General of the United States just declared a public health emergency on loneliness. The UK, about 3 years ago, said loneliness was the number one public health issue in the UK, and they appointed a cabinet-level minister of loneliness. And some of the data that they've been putting out there says that people that are regularly experiencing severe loneliness and lack of friendship, that the health effect is equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So it's serious stuff. So the CDC survey that just came out less than 12 months ago said half of US adults are experiencing measurable deep levels of loneliness. Across age groups, people are spending less time with each other in person than any time in the past 30 years. The advisory from the CDC said this was most pronounced in people between 15 and 24 and 18 and 25 who have 70% less interaction with peers in person than those same age groups did two decades ago. 70% less. 18 to 25 year olds, 40% experience chronic loneliness. And guys, I'm sorry to say, if you're a guy, the stats are really a lot worse. So in 1990, when they did a survey about if you were a guy 18 to 25 and you had a major crisis, what would you do? And in 1990, 50% of young men said they would immediately call a close friend. Last year in the survey, 22%, only 22% said they had a friend close enough to call. It's really sad. On a funny note, sort of, John Mulaney from Saturday Night Live, he says, "My dad has no friends, and your dad has no friends. And if you think your dad has friends, you're wrong. Your mom has friends, and they have husbands. Those are not your dad's friends." And I will say that is funny, but it's true. So we are not in a good place about friendship, and that is part of the reason we want to devote some time. Both Justin and I spend a pretty fair amount of time doing counseling with people, and this is something we hear about a lot. And everybody in this room, y'all are all very put together and look like you've got it all together and you are happy, wealthy, and wise and all of that. But behind all of that, we know that a lot of people are really struggling in this area, and particularly when you get out of college and you are beginning to work for the first time, and if you're in a new city, it can be devastating dealing with loneliness and trying to figure out how to build good friendships.
Yeah, I think it takes people by surprise, because you're actually, I did a lot of college ministry, and you're on a campus and your closest friends are all within a mile of where you're living in this concentrated area, and that sets you up for success in many ways because you're in close proximity. But then you graduate and all of a sudden you're outside of the 18 to 22 age range, you're a minority, your friends are spread all over the place, you've got more demands, and it really, people say this, that first year of college is so hard to transition to. It's actually the year after, I think, that's even more challenging. So excited to talk about friendship, and actually the Bible has great news about friendship. Yes. We were made for friendship.
Yes.
And that actually goes all the way back to who God is. He didn't just make the world this way, but God himself, according to the scriptures, is triune. And we could go off into this, you know, theological reality, but the basic point is that's a relationship. Mm-hmm. In God himself, there is this relationship and friendship between the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And being in his image, we were made to have that, exactly. And so one of the things I think that we're hopeful to do in the next few weeks is talk practically about not just what friendship is, but how can we improve? What are some barriers to all of that? And so we'll talk about that. And obviously C.S. Lewis next time has a lot to say. We're still going to reference him tonight, but he's excellent on the topic of friendship. But we both... you saw him, this guy Vaughn Roberts, over the summer.
Yeah, I just had lunch with him, and this was such a great example. Vaughn Roberts is a brilliant Church of England priest. Several people have said he's the greatest living preacher in the Anglican Church right now.
He's really good.
He's still young. He's probably in his late 40s, I would guess. But we have become friends through a variety of circumstances, and Jane and I were going to Oxford, where he lives and is rector of a very large church with a lot of Oxford students. And so I emailed him and said, "So excited, can't wait to get together with you." And he wrote me back and he was like, that is the worst email I've ever gotten, because you are arriving the day that I leave, and you're like taunting me because we're not going to be able to see each other. So I was like, it's really bad. You're going to have to come back to Charleston. But fortunately, unlike myself, I happened to check my email late Saturday night when we were in Oxford, and I've gotten an email from him at 11:30 at night saying, Brian, I'm so excited. My flight is late, and they have bumped it where I've got just enough time. If you don't mind my bringing suitcases to lunch, we can have lunch tomorrow before I get on the plane. And it was awesome. So we had this wonderful time together. But that's somebody who's putting a priority on friendship. It would have been so much easier for him to just go to the airport. But that's not what he chose to do.
So he wrote this book. I came across Vaughn Roberts because he's a biblical scholar, and he had one of the best books on understanding the Bible as a story that I've ever read called, I just lost the name of it in my mind. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay.
It's a great book.
It's an amazing book.
It is. I've seen it.
The point is he helped me
understand.
You've
read it. I've seen it.
Yeah. He was really kind. And it was helpful in understanding the whole Bible goes together. But something kind of different, although he starts this first chapter on friendship relating to, hey, by the way, this is the whole story of the Bible, is all about friendship. And he wrote this little, I mean, this book can be read in an hour. It's a little tiny thing called True Friendship.
And it's cheap. You should get it. It's so good.
And, you know, he
just
says...
We don't get a commission.
We don't, actually. But he's honest, because I think all of us struggle to some degree of wanting to be better friends, wanting to have better friendships. And he's not only obviously writing about that, but he lives that out. And the fact that you witnessed that this summer is great. But he says true friendship, he says it's a bunch of C's. He's, of course, a preacher, so it's all alliteration, a bunch of C's. True friendship is crucial, close, constant, candid, careful, and Christ-centered. We've already talked a little bit about how it's crucial. What others of those, losing my voice, stood out to you as you read through that?
Yeah, so I think, well, really all of them, but close is one of the ones that I think is really important for us to think about now, because in our culture today, you know, it's really easy to say, oh yeah, that person's my close friend. But what does that even mean anymore? And part of what he talks about in this book is that being close to someone requires deep investment in the other person's life in terms of time. You can't be close to someone just by texting and social media. It demands in-person time where you look in the other person's eyes as you're speaking to them, and you talk about your hopes and your dreams and your fears, and you are willing to make a priority of that relationship. And that sort of gets to the crucial part a little bit too, but I think one of the things that is so easy to miss when you read the New Testament, and if you read the Gospels and look at Jesus, it is like the greatest billboard for friendship is really important. So when the Son of God comes into the world, which is what we believe as Christians, Jesus is the Son of God coming into the world, he could have done anything to try to share his message. But what he chose to do was to call together a group of friends and deeply invest in them for a period of 3 years and do life with them, the ups, the downs, everything. And that was his strategy for calling the world back to God. Friendship was the most important thing in that. He didn't create a committee or just call down fire on people to try to scare people. He was deeply invested in these other guys. And so I think when you look at Jesus, you see a model of the kind of investment that leads to close friendship. And one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, are we willing to make the sacrifice that is required to do that?
Yeah. And Jesus, his life is a wonderful model of what, I mean, he handles both crowds and large numbers of people in a way that models what friendship looks like to a large number of people. And he also does that in a very small, intimate setting with 3 or 12 or whatever it is. And it's striking to me how much we can learn from Jesus. And the pinnacle, really, of, you know, he's got 3 years with his disciples. And I think it's at the very last night before he goes to the cross. He says, "No longer do I call you my disciples, but I call you my friends."
Yes.
Greater love has known than this, that a man lay down his life
for his friends. Yeah, he says, "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you." And then he goes on to say, "As I have loved you, so you are to love one another." And a lot of that closeness that's expressed in that is self-sacrifice. And that is such a rare thing in our culture. But it's part of what builds closeness and friendship.
That's ultimately the root of love that is missing so much, is I want to, but it's the thing that captures our imagination so much, and all of the stories that we love, that often have these great friendships that we love, is they're sacrificing, as you alluded to earlier, they're sacrificing being in other places to be close and present, but they give of themselves for the good of somebody else. That's what love is.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to say a little bit more about what actually friendship is. I know Lewis has, what's the friends versus lovers? Help
yeah,
me with that.
So Lewis says friends are shoulder to shoulder, which is interesting because Vaughn uses that here as
That's
well.
On the walking shoulder to shoulder. That's
yes,
the
and so friends are shoulder to shoulder, where lovers are face to face, sort of exclusive. But one of the things Lewis says is that real friendship begins when two people are talking or are together and they have an experience where one of them says, "What? You two? You are actually really interested in that?" And he says, that thing that until that moment you thought was your own private treasure or burden is deeply shared by this other person. And then he goes on to say that it is really about, do you see the same truth? And that when you see that same truth and you have that same deep love for something, it immediately sets you apart and makes you have a connection with that person that is deeper than what's just out there in the world. And part of what happens today in our culture, particularly even with social media, we think we're doing a really good job if we're actually with other people, and that's true. That's much better than not being with people. But a lot of times we mistake proximity for friendship. And I'm going to use a really stupid example right now that if I'd prepared, I would have brought a really stupid exhibit to illustrate this. But just imagine a big clear mug right here that's full of boiling water, okay? It's miraculous, it just keeps boiling, okay? So it's boiling water, and over here is a really fine tea bag from England, okay? And you've got this mug of boiling water, and you've got this great tea bag, and I'm holding the tea bag up against the exterior of that mug of boiling water. And what will happen is precisely nothing. Because in order to make tea, the tea bag has to go into the water. Being next to it is not enough. So for example, going just to a concert, going to a movie, going to a sports event, sitting next to someone, that's better than watching it on TV, but that's not friendship. That might be companionship, but friendship involves a deep interaction with the other person where you are sharing of who, what you're made of with the other person in the same way that that boiling water and tea bag would do.
Yeah. I think it's helpful to think, especially for your generation, right? Like the way that the world is now is so different than almost every other generation that's gone before. And unless you accurately diagnose the issue, you're not really going to experience the flourishing you were meant to have. And so if the problem is actually the problem is part of the blessing. The blessing is that we have access to so much information and so much proximity through technology that it makes it very difficult to actually get into, immerse the, you know, the teabag into the boiling water.
And we can mistake it for the real thing.
Because look at all that you're doing. You feel exhausted because you've done all these things, but actually you haven't done the thing that matters the most, which is doing less, but doing that more intentionally and well. One of the things, I came across this guy's name. I don't know how to pronounce it. Is it Aelred?
Yes.
Aelred? Okay. Mm-hmm. He talked about the same thing you were talking
Aelred
about.
Aelred of Clairvaux.
Oh, look at you. Wow, all right. I don't know who that is, but I thought he had really neat things to say, which was the whole friendship being about shared desires and shared goals. And he kind of divvied it up, and there's three kinds of friendships. I found this really helpful. There's carnal friendships, which are looking for, they're friendships that are based on this goal of just shared pleasure. It's a shared pursuit of pleasure. The worldly friendships were about mutual advantage. You're in it so that you can help one another out and
networking.
Get advantage.
Yes.
And actually, the third one is different than either of those, where it's not really about you at all, but it's about something outside of yourself. He calls it spiritual friendship, which is ultimately about, I think, finds its climax in our relationship to God. Friendships that are pointed in that direction, all about the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
I think that's really a helpful framework to think about your own friendships and what they're defined by, right? And it's those ones that he says that are ultimately about the kingdom of God together that have the strongest cohesion to it because they're after the highest goal.
Yes, and one of the things that's really interesting, if you, how many people in here ever studied Aristotle? Oh, that's so sad.
I see a couple of hands on the floor.
Oh, well, there are a few, so great.
Sorry, they didn't
know
Friends either, so I mean, it's basically the same.
So if you had had a good education, you would have read Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, and in the middle of that work, which every educated person in the world read until about 50 years ago, there would be a section that's called De Amicitia, which is about friendship, and where Aristotle talks about how important friendship is, and that friendship is one of the most important of the loves. And one of the issues that we have in our culture that I have seen because of my advanced years, over time, we have gotten so much to the place in our culture that we associate love equals sex, that we think that the idea that that's the only place, a romantic relationship is the only kind of love that there is, whereas in fact, throughout human history, friendship has been understood as real and deep love. And that's the way that Jesus understands it. And in that passage we were just talking about at the Last Supper, Jesus talks about friendship as love. And you have to remember, Jesus is with these 12 guys who are kind of rough around the edges, fishermen, tax collectors, most of them probably in their 20s at this point. This is not a group of sort of dandified, sissified guys sitting around saying, oh, I love you. That is not what this is, but it is a real and robust love that is rooted in who God has made us to be.
One of the things that I found really helpful as he went beyond, well, actually, no, one more point on the crucial side of it, because he's saying, you know, I'm pretty introverted, you're pretty extroverted.
Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that. That's why we get along so well. But he's saying, regardless of your temperament, regardless of your status, whether you're married or single or introverted, extroverted, or male or female, because this is part of who God made human beings to be, it's absolutely essential. And I find that helpful being married and going, wow, my friendships look different now. But I love the principle that he shared in there, which was like good friendships have ultimately better marriages and bad friendships have worse marriages.
Yeah.
And I think that was a helpful way to think about, okay, you can't just say, well, my wife's going to meet all the needs that I have for a relationship. It's going to ruin the marriage, but also managing the expectations of what that friendship's going to look like. Because some of my closest friends that I had before I got married, that doesn't look the same because I simply don't have the same time or priorities, right, especially with children. But
yeah,
I found that really helpful.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And a part of the thing that is so significant as you get married or as you think about marriage is to realize that the cultural sort of story that when you meet the right person and then you're like married to them, that person meets all your needs and you ride off together into the sunset, blissful, and it's just the birds are singing and all of that. Marriage is great. I love being married and I have a wonderful, incredible wife. But the fact of the matter is there are some things that she loves that I just am not interested in. And there are some things that I love that she is not interested in. And we did not get good advice when we first got married, and we were sort of told, you need to all do the same things. And so some of y'all know I was a piano performance major when I was in college for a while, and I love classical music. And so I had always had season's tickets to the symphony. So when we first got married, I was like, we're going to go every Friday night to the symphony. We're living in Atlanta. It's a great symphony. And I was like, this is going to be awesome. Gina's going to love this. And we would go, and I'd spent a lot of money on these tickets, and we would go, and Jane is teaching elementary school in Gwinnett County, an hour and a half commute from where we were living. And at the end of the week, after getting up at 4:30 in the morning every day, you can just imagine, she comes to a dark auditorium and they're playing violin music. She's like,
she probably loved it for the wrong reasons, different reasons.
And I was like, what are you doing? That's Itzhak Perlman up there playing. What are you doing? But the opposite was also true. Her family are all really good tennis players. And her parents, even in their 70s, were winning the 55 and over Williams College alumni tennis tournament. And they would play tennis on every vacation we went on. And they would invite me to play, and I felt like, well, I need to do that because I'm committed to this marriage and I'm going to go play. And I had taken tennis lessons at the country club here when I was 12, and I had learned that that was not my thing. And I had not gotten any better since age 12. And so I would go out, and they were so nice to me. And then I finally realized they would be so much happier if I would just get off this court and they could actually play tennis. But we finally sat down and talked, and we just laughed about it because I needed to find somebody who was a good friend who would love to go to the symphony, and she needed to find a friend that would love to go play tennis. And then we would come back from those things enriched and bring that joy back to our marriage.
Do you think that's also true for, I mean, obviously marriage is, at its most fundamental, is a friendship. I love mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we both, in premarital counseling, we'll try to cast a vision for couples who are coming to get married that it's not ultimately about romantic love. It's
right.
If you cultivate a true, genuine friendship, that's actually kind of the seedbed that's going to foster
everything,
love and
yeah.
emotional feelings and all that stuff. But I wonder, that same balance, right? That's so important to be able to have the ability not to totally smother on the one hand, but be so disconnected on the other. Does that translate over, you think, into other friendships?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think that part of it is understanding, one of the problems that we have in our culture, not just people your age, people my age as well, is that we are encouraged to be selfish. And so we tend to think about friendship in terms of what's in it for us. And the biblical model is so different from that, and it's much more about what can you give to the other person, and how can you understand, how can you be like Christ to that other person. And so I think the more that you kind of get away from this idea of thinking you've got to have everything in common, but realize more that your role is to help serve that other person. And, one of the Proverbs talks about iron sharpening iron, that's part of the role of friendship, is that it's important to be with people as friends who don't agree with you about everything, because that's part of how you grow.
Yeah. And I think recognizing you have the permission, as I think it can be a challenge sometimes when you define friendship, right, as we formed a friendship because we have the same goals and desires, mm-hmm. right? Well, not everyone is the exact same in those things. It's
right.
actually, you can have permission to say, you know, this aspect of your life, I have no interest in. I'm actually thrilled that you find that interesting. I'm interested that you find it interesting,
yeah.
and yeah. I want to learn more about why you find it interesting. But give yourself the permission to not necessarily have that same interest, and the balance that it provides, and go, you know what, we can have basically time apart from one another, right? And this also touches on the dynamic of when all of a sudden you have a really close friend and you do have similar interests, but then all of a sudden another friend comes
mm-hmm.
and they find somebody else, and all of a sudden now you feel like your friend was stolen because
yeah.
they're friends with somebody else. And like, it sounds so fifth grade, but that's actually true. I think
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things that the friendship dynamic is, when it expands from just two to more than that,
yeah.
we can feel threatened by
mm-hmm.
that. But that touches on, I think, the balance of the shared desire and shared interest and shared goal, but also recognizing there's a balance to that, and
yes.
time apart.
Yeah, and one of the things we haven't really touched on that I think is implicit in this discussion is friendship involves, at its root, it must have one-on-one time with the other person. You can't have deep friendships that are just group events. You can have a type of friendship, a group can have almost a personality, if you will, but deep friendship involves having to have that one-on-one time with the other person. We'll talk more about that when we get into Lewis next time.
Yeah, and we'll have to come back to some of these, which I'm sure we will, but the things that stood out to me, the importance of being candid in friendships. That chapter, you know, there's one of the proverbs that I love the most. Whoever flatters his neighbor is spreading, or sorry, whoop. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Basically, this whole thing is just like going through the book of Proverbs. If you want
yeah.
help in friendships, read the book of
yeah.
Proverbs. It's going to be about wisdom. But
mm-hmm.
I think that's so important, because if you've ever seen American Idol or one of, he talks, I forget the show that he mentioned, but where people who go on the show and they're terrible at singing, and you're like, how did they make it this far? And then you see how they made it this far was, you know, Simon Cowell or whoever like says, you're awful, you sound like a dying cat. And then like, they're like, you're wrong, I'm gonna go to Hollywood, prove you wrong.
Yep.
And
yep.
so then they go off the stage and they have these friends that have basically,
you were amazing,
multiplied
yep.
kisses,
yep.
which was not helpful. You need
yep.
to speak with candor. We can talk more about that next time, but there's also careful knowing the right time, knowing how to say things. There's so much wisdom. We'll get into the how-to later, I think. But I just wanted to say that because I found that so helpful, the
yeah.
role of speaking the truth and knowing how to do that. But
yeah.
we should probably go to questions now. If,
okay.
John, how are we doing?
We got a lot of questions. So if you want to take this time to upvote some questions or to add additional questions, now would be the time. I'll go ahead and ask the first one. Can you share one of the most impactful friendships you've experienced that leads you to Christ?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so I have been very fortunate in having a number of impactful friendships that have helped me to grow closer to Christ. One of them was with my friend Preston Hipp. Preston is somebody that I grew up with, although I was a little bit older than he was. When we moved back to Charleston, we reconnected. And one of the things that was really great in that friendship was that he made such an effort to be self-sacrificial and to serve me, but at the same time to want to find times together where we could focus on our spiritual life together. And so very often he would just call me up and say, I want to come over and pray with you for a while. And I was not used to having people that would say things like that. You know, people might say, let's go do this thing or that thing. But he was very often saying, I would love to just come over and pray with you. And the other thing that was great about him was that he was so intentional about encouragement. So as I started moving into the ministry, every time that I would preach a sermon, he would leave a note in my box, or when we got to cell phone time, he would send me a text saying, I'm praying for you as you go into the pulpit, that God is going to use what you do. I could go on and on and on about that, but it really, the time that I had with him, he died, unfortunately, in his late 50s from cancer. But that time that I had with him, he drew me so much deeper into my walk with God. And a lot of that was just by being very intentional and inviting me to do things that were not sort of normal, you know? And it was great. Like, another thing was, if he would find a conference with a really good speaker, and he said, I've signed us both up, I want you to go and be my roommate. And I was like, oh. But invariably, it ended up being great. Yeah. So
it's amazing. That stands out to me, the initiative, right?
Yes.
That they'll take in being close, and I want, you know, it's a balance from being too in your face, but I think our default is almost being too, I'm gonna let the other person come to me. And
right.
if that
right.
is the position we all take, it doesn't happen. So, there's so many. I mean, my wife is one of my best, is my best friend, and I her boldness and friendship is what stands out to me. But I go back to high school and college, especially, where, like you, there was this, just it looked very different all of a sudden than anything I had experienced before. And there was a fumbling kind of, we don't know what we're doing so much. We know that we've been around other folks who just value things differently. And I think that's what stands out to me. It's just like being around folks who are like, we really want to actually try to live the Christian life.
Yeah.
And just naming that and going, I think the Bible should be a part of that probably, and praying, but we just felt so clumsy at it.
Yeah.
And I think just naming it and having the permission for that, but that really, I mean, now, gosh, that was 2004, and to this day, now there are like three of them are now priests. It's, I don't know, that's funny how that worked, but we're still good friends to this day, and the ability to confess what's really going on.
Yeah.
I think that was, there was this balance of, there was the intentionality and the initiative of each of us trying to do that, but more than anything, I knew that I could actually bear my soul mm-hmm. with somebody, and that they would handle that well. They would be
yeah.
able to share the gospel, which is that God forgives you in Jesus
mm-hmm.
Christ, that it's not nothing, you need to turn from this, but he who confesses his sins will find mercy, and who denies it is a liar. So those are the elements that have been really helpful in my friendships.
What are your thoughts on men and women being friends? Where is that line that shouldn't be crossed?
That is a great question. I think that it is important that men and women have friendships. I think that if you are married, it is important that this is something that you talk openly about with your spouse and talk through sort of parameters and all of that. One of my closest friends currently in Charleston is a woman, and she's married, and we have a wonderful friendship that is centered in our mutual faith in Christ, but it is not remotely romantic. I mean, there's like no element of that at all. But we are also very careful to have parameters of, you know, meeting in a public place, not, you know, being alone at somebody's house or something like that. But I think that it is important to realize that God has made men and women differently, and that there are amazing things that we can learn from being in deep friendships with people of the opposite sex. My major mentor in my Christian faith when I was in college was a woman who was about 10 years older than I was, who was the staff person for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship at the time. And She just had a huge impact on my life, so I'm just very grateful for that.
I think it's essential having friendships with people of the opposite sex. The Bible gives a framework for that. If you're a Christian, you have brothers and sisters is what you see, essentially. Mm-hmm. This relationship is familial. And I think in some ways it can be helpful as you think about, all right, would you be comfortable doing this with your sister? If not, then you probably shouldn't do that.
Yep.
And that has physical implications, right? But I think there's our tendency, I see you go wrong in both directions, right? Is you can either have guys who only really know how to be friends with girls, and that's kind of a yellow flag, and then you have same thing with girls having being only with guys, and, or the opposite, right, where they're just able to relate to their own gender. And you really are, I think you need, as you said so well, the difference between men and women,
right,
and the benefit that you get by having the gifts of the different gender around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you talked about just naming and being honest and about the fact that we are so prone to seek self-love, which can very quickly go into unwanted sexual things, even if you start out that way. And so that can be even starting in prayer, right? And which is a good thing. It can start all of a sudden now you're disclosing your deepest, darkest things to somebody. And if you're in a relationship, if you're married with somebody, that can be emotional infidelity,
right?
And so you have to be careful with that, and always aware that the person you're in a relationship with is okay and aware of what you're actually doing. It's important.
Great question.
How do you suggest staying in touch with a friend when they move away?
That is also a great question. One of the things that is such an issue in our culture right now is that people move so much, which is not the way that it historically has ever been until the past 100 years. But I think one of the things that's important is that when you have a close friend who's moving away, is that you sit down and have a conversation, you actually talk about what are we going to do with this friendship. You know, and it may be that both of you are very committed to the friendship. And I just had this conversation with someone right before we went to England in August, where this friend of mine is moving. And so I basically said, you know, where are you with this? And basically what we came to is that we decided that we really did want to keep in touch, and that we felt like the Lord was at work in this friendship, and we didn't want to abandon that. And so we agreed that we were going to, and we still haven't quite figured out if we're doing this every other week, if we're doing it once a month, we are going to, at the very sort of the minimum thing, we are going to do an email where we did the old rosebud and thorn thing. I don't know if y'all know rosebud and thorn, but the thing that you are finding joy in, the thing that you are looking forward to, and then the thing that is difficult in your life, and that we would share those, and that we would continue doing that. But I think the most important thing is having the conversation and not just moving off and just leaving it sort of hanging about what's going to happen.
And in addition to that, because I feel, looking at this, it's like, man, I'm so convicted at a lot of my friendships. There's been seasons of life where I've had great friendships, and then, you know, all of the guys except one of my groomsmen have moved to different parts of the country. And I think for many of us, we can just feel like, oh, I'm a terrible friend. And so we can just caught in guilt and shame. And the best thing to do is not just wallow in that, but try something. Reach out, confess that. And often there's been a number of times where that's happened, and you can jump right back in to where you were. But being clear, as you said, about what can each of you actually do in this season that you're in. I found that if you have the ability to call just periodically, setting a set time is one of those things that I think is really helpful for maintaining friendships. And if they're across the country, doing what you can together and really committing to being in person once a year is a realistic goal that actually makes a lot of difference. And so that was some of the tidbits that I got that were
helpful. Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think it's possible to have really meaningful friendships even when that doesn't happen. So like, I think Vaughn is an example of that. I feel that we have a strong friendship. I have two other friends that live in Oxford, Simon Harbin and Michael Ward, and we hope that we're going to see each other at least once every year. We keep in pretty good touch with their email and other things like that. So if you're both committed to it, you can definitely continue to grow even though you're not in the same place.
Do you have to be friends with someone you do not have anything in common with? Is it bad to not want to be friends?
That's a great question.
That is a great question. I would say that is not bad.
Yeah.
I think that God has created everyone differently, and that there are people that you are drawn to and that there are people that you are not drawn to, and that's okay. Now, it doesn't mean that you should be rude to people that you are not drawn to, and that you should certainly treat them with kindness and charity and all of that, but I think that, again, sort of the heart of friendship is being drawn to the same things and having some commonality. It doesn't mean that you think exactly the same about those things, but I think that if you don't have that spark of mutual interest, it's very hard to build a friendship that will be sustainable.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just, we should be friendly with people.
Yes.
Don't be rude or mean, but goodness gracious, you can't be friends with everybody. That was one of the things I appreciated is in his book, is you have to recognize your limitations. Good, having three really good friends as opposed to 30 good acquaintances is far better than the latter.
So. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's again where Jesus' example is instructive, because Jesus really deeply invest in this group of 12 men. Within those 12 men, he has three that he's really deeply invested with, and then among those three, one that he's the closest to. And I think that's sort of a human scale understanding of how that can work.
And even actually outside of, I mean, he disappoints people all the time.
Right.
Right? Like, he goes away from even the crowds.
Right.
Like,
yes, we're coming to look for you so you can come do this. And he says, and he left.
Yeah.
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 And went elsewhere.
And I think that is really instructive on, he did not do everything for everybody. And that's instructive as we approach friendship, thinking about our own limitations. We have to be willing to not just try to people please everyone. Recognize your own, be wise and discerning about where you're investing yourself.
Yes.
What do you think are the best ways to make friends?
Oh, we're going to do a whole, I mean,
yes.
There's so much.
We're going to be talking about that. So I think there are a lot of ways to make friends. One is by being interested in things and having things that you're enthusiastic about and pursuing those. I'm going to steal a little thunder from Lewis, but one of the things that led to C.S. Lewis and Tolkien becoming great friends was that they both got really involved in a club that read out loud Icelandic folk tales together in Icelandic language. That's pretty obscure. But they put themselves out there that they wanted to do that. So I think putting yourself out there in things that you're interested in is really important. Another thing is not, and we're going to do a whole session on barriers to friendship, but one of the things that we tend to do in our culture is we are very, for lack of a better word, ageist, that we think we can only be friends with people that are our same age and background. And that is just not true historically. And one of the beautiful things when you look in scripture is you see these really deep intergenerational friendships. In the Old Testament, you look at Ruth and Naomi, where they're decades between their ages, but they love each other deeply. You see Paul and Timothy, where they're decades. So I think broadening your perspective about where you're looking for friends can be important in that.
That's what's so exhilarating is finding people who have similar interests but different perspectives because they're not the same as you. They're different ages and backgrounds, all that. Yep. And I think, we limit the pool so often to who can possibly be our friends. But one of the things that struck me about what you said about Lewis and Tolkien was that they put themselves out there.
Yeah.
And the key, I think, there's many keys, but asking good questions, being willing to ask questions, being a good listener, being wise and discerning about, okay, maybe this isn't going anywhere, and to have the courage to just kind of go somewhere else and find something else, someone else to try to lean into. But so often people feel paralyzed, I think, and just, I don't know where to go or what to do. And instead, those people who seem to really, I think women are better at this than men, where they're just better question
like
askers.
Many things.
Yeah.
Yes.
And more, I mean, gosh, some of the people, this is why I love what Molly does. Like, she'll meet people and she'll be like, do you want to be my friend? And I'm like, I could never ask that question. But she, like, ends up with them as friends. It's ridiculous.
Right, right.
Like, they're like, of course I want to be your friend. I'm like, how'd you do that? And but I think, that's one of the things. And guys are like, I don't want to talk about anything. I just want to do stuff with other guys together. And there's a place for that, right? But, like, if all you're ever doing is doing those things, like, recognize that, in general, guys like to do things together. But being able to ask questions, to know what's actually going on, what are their heart, you know, what's their thoughts and feelings and longings, and it's okay to ask those questions. A lot of the best friendships I've had with guys is people have been willing to do that, and you're like, wow, you actually care about me, and we can still play golf, which is great.
Well, the other thing I would say too is prayer is really important in that, to pray that God would put people in your path and that you would be able to lean into the people that God desires for you to be in friendship with.
How do you approach someone who really wants to be friends, but you just do not have... Sorry, let me ask that again. How do you approach someone who really wants to be friends, but you just simply do not have the capacity to pour into them?
That is a great question. I think that is the type of situation that requires a difficult conversation. But I think it's important to be able... Well, I would say two things. First is, it may appear at first glance that that is the situation, that there is no way that you have that time. But it could be, it's always worth praying, God, if you want me to pour into this relationship, would you please show me that and how to make it happen? That's a good prayer. But I also think that there's no reason in the world that you cannot sit down with someone and say, you know, I am so honored that you would want to be more invested in a relationship with me right now, but the fact of the matter is that with the other things that I've already committed to, my time is very limited right now, and I think it would be difficult to be able to pursue this. That is speaking the truth, and hopefully you can speak the truth in love. But I also think it's important to not just go with your first instinct and to pray into it first. What would you say to that?
The part of the question that stood out to me was, if you don't have the time to pour into it, it almost flags in me that the one person is... Again, these are all questions that we're reading into, I guess, but it sounds like one person's coming to get and the other person's pouring in. And I think I want to be clear, friendship is both of you pouring out for one another. And yet with that, a number of things can go awry where I think that what you said is really helpful, assuming the best about what the other person's doing, because at the end of the day, if you're like, oh, I find this person interesting, I find some things that we have in common or particular areas of life that we really like to talk about, and if I had more time than I currently have, I would like to go further. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you can't do something, right? And as long as both people are okay with, boy, we really enjoy the time that we do spend together, and I think you can just lean into that and do that, and what I have a hunch is that the person asking the question is saying, well, the person who's coming to me really wants more than I can give.
Right.
And if that's the case, the most kind thing you can do is say, I really enjoy, hopefully you enjoy the time. If you don't enjoy the time, then it's okay to say, you know, I don't think, you know, just being honest, right, being candid without trying to be mean or anything like that. But if you do find genuine interest or the possibility of genuine friendship and interest, then say, I would really like this to continue. I really enjoy talking about this. I really enjoy the times that we spent. Here's what I'm thinking it could look like together, and pitching it positively. And friendship's one of the things that's so crucial, is that you actually have to trust that the time and the effort that the other person's giving is sincere and genuine and upright, mm-hmm. and not being cynical and suspicious that they're doing all this. That's trying to ruin the friendship. One more, I think, and we have about that time.
Are deep friendships possible in the workplace?
I sure hope so.
yes. We can say that we have a deep friendship and we work together. But I think that they can be. I think, though, that a deep friendship in the workplace demands time together outside of the workplace as well. And if you are only basing your relationship on the time that you're spending together in the workplace, you might want to ask yourself the question, are you being really responsible with what you are being paid to do by your employer? That is important as a Christian, that you be working as unto the Lord. But I do think that you can have deep friendships in the workplace. I also think that you don't want to have all your deep friendships be in the workplace, because every workplace, no matter how wonderful it is, there are times where it's very stressful and you need the counsel and friendship of people that are not in that environment. So I think having a variety of friends is important in that context.
Yeah, and I will say that I think that's one of the things I enjoy both in our friendship and with our wives. Like, we do a lot of stuff outside of work and don't talk about work often and other things that we enjoy. And I think that's really, really important. You said it so well. So I don't know if I'd add anything else to that, but it's really good. Having friends outside of your work environment, because so often it can just totally become about the work itself. And so having people that you can go to where you're not talking about that is really good.
Very important. Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks so much for coming out. This has been a lot of fun. We'll be around to chat a little bit more if you're interested in that.
We've got 3 more sessions on friendship.
There's so much.
We are so excited to talk about all this. So
that's great.
Thank y'all for coming.